the night was almost over.
No,
Marie-Hélène frowned at my sketchbook.
Simon, it's been an hour. Everyone else has drawn the still life.
She didn't need to finish the thought. My page looked like it had developed chicken pox.
It's experimental, I said, lifting my chin.
Very Picasso-ian.
My tutor always said my work was reminiscent of his blue period.
Marie-Hélène made a face. I couldn't blame her, really. Simon was a pretty awful person.
S.O.S. Can you draw?
I texted Holmes under the table.
I'm about to be exposed as a fraud. Are you busy? Can you come?
The response was instantaneous.
Not busy, she said. Have experienced abject failure. Auctioneer steadfastly denies any idea of stolen work, bought slash sold, even when persuaded to speak.
I didn't want to know what sort of persuasion she meant.
Cannot draw, but can fake it better than you. Address, please.
She was there 10 minutes later, leaning over my shoulder.
Simon, she said, loud enough for everyone to hear, are you still shy about drawing in front of people? He can be so self-conscious. Don't tell me he fed you some line about making experimental art.
With exaggerated slowness, Holmes shook her head at Marie-Hélène.
Men, they're such self-saboteurs. Can you show me where the wine is? I just had the worst night.
Nathaniel had been listening, because as Holmes led Marie-Hélène away, he came over to me with a concerned expression.
Is that true, Simon? It's okay. I know it's a lot of pressure to work in front of more experienced artists. You want to talk about it?
Yes, I said. Very much.
Hating Holmes for fixing my whole foobar under cover-up in about 30 seconds. Nathaniel led me over to the corner kitchen. The loft was a giant, echoing space, brick walls and a concrete floor, but the kitchen only held a sink and a microwave.
Tea? I noticed you weren't drinking.
I'm not much for it, I said, as Simon.
I'm already a bit nervous. A pint never does much to help that for me. Odd. It's usually the opposite.
He pulled a mug from an otherwise empty cabinet, filling it with water.
You're a nice kid.
Am I?
I laughed. I sounded a bit insane.
No, you are, but you seem a little sad. Is anything wrong?
I shrugged.
Just feeling a little out of my element.
I'm happy to introduce you around.
Thanks,
I said, hating that I wanted to say yes.
I think I need to take my time with that.
Bad night, huh? Okay, I'll take the hint, he said. So, how'd you find out about the school here? We're not very well known outside of the city.
I decided to try for a direct approach.
My uncle lives here. I'm staying with him nearby. He couldn't come out tonight, but the Old Met is his Saturday night place, and he told me to check it out. Maybe you know him. A tall, dark hair. He wears it slicked back.
With a sharp crash, Nathaniel dropped the mug.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. Shaky hands. Long night. You know, I can't believe. You're David's nephew. He never talked about his family.
Hook, line, sinker. So much for FUBAR. As long as David was, in fact, Leander's alias.
You know him?
I asked, as Nathaniel kicked the ceramic pieces into a pile.
You could say that.
He was avoiding my eyes.
And he's at home tonight. I didn't think...
Well,
he is,
I said blithely.
You know him, cooking up a storm, arguing with the crossword puzzle answers. That sounds like him,
he said, which was good, as I had no idea what David would do on a Saturday night in, or who exactly Nathaniel was to him. All I had was his name, that he was one of Leander's contacts. Maybe. Did that mean that he was under suspicion? Had he stolen paintings? Organized a forgery ring? Was he part of a drug cartel? Was he helping Leander out? Was he so surprised to hear about David because he knew he was being held somewhere or, awful thought, dead? What the hell was I doing? And where was Holmes?
I should get home, actually, I said, forcing a yawn. I needed to talk to my father. I needed to get him to give me the details.
He worries if I'm out too late. I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that I met you.
Yes, yes, of course,
Nathaniel squinted at me. I felt suddenly like an insect on a slide.
Tell him to meet me tomorrow night at East Side Gallery, our usual corner at the usual time.
That didn't sound sketchy or anything.
Yeah, okay.
It's Simon, right?
His stare grew thornier.
Right. See you.
Before he could ask for Simon's last name, I was out the door. Holmes met me outside. Her arms were covered in goosebumps, and I gave her my jacket. She took it with a show of reluctance.
Is this our new status quo? You leave me to babysit your girlfriend while you muck up my investigation?
Our investigation? Hey, maybe I do. How come I ended up playing pool with your boyfriend while you threw yourself at some auctioneer?
Honestly, will you quit imagining that I'm some tarted-up Mata Hari? My espionage work is far more subtle than that.
Really?
Really. Then how did you approach him?
I appealed to his sympathies.
Holmes. She paused.
I might have threatened to kill his Shih Tzu.
Nope, never mind. Stop. We looked at each other. After a second, she started to laugh.
Watson, do you even know exactly what Leander is doing here in Berlin?
No, I admitted. Not exactly.
I don't either, she said. Shouldn't we get back to Greystone, then, and find out?
6.
Have you found him yet?
My father's text woke me at 5 the next morning.
Call me when you wake up. I need to know, my screen read.
I turned it around in an attempt to assuage my guilt.
We'd spent this past fall fending for ourselves because Holmes had been too proud to ask her family for help.
No more, I told myself, and clambered down from her lofted bed. When we'd gotten in last night, she'd flopped face down on the cot and gone instantly to sleep, as though her body recognized the rare opportunity to recharge. I slept fitfully, and now that I was awake, I was anxious to get going. 10 more minutes, and I'd go wake up Milo. I'd get him to throw some real resources at the Leander situation. Surely with his help, we'd find Holmes's uncle within the day, and then we could get down to normal things. Museums, curry shops, Christmas shopping maybe, and for a moment, I wondered what I should get Holmes. Pipettes? A book on something bizarre, like anglerfish? August would get her something better than that. Something more inventive. No, it was definitely better to focus on the task at hand. Milo was waiting for me in the hall, as though he were a robot that had been left to recharge there all night.
Watson, he said impatiently. Come along. Breakfast is in my kitchen.
As I trailed after him, I realized that his actual living quarters were on the other side of the floor. Holmes and I, it seemed, had been housed in the hallway just outside the rooms that held Milo's personal security team. He never said it out loud, but I got the sense that his sister was housed outside his penthouse for her protection, and not because he thought she'd muck up his nice vintage carpet. She was the first person I saw when we entered his rooms. She was framed by the floor-to-ceiling window, playing a song on her violin. I stopped in the doorway to listen. The sound was spectral, almost galactic in its runs and rivulets. It had an aching descant. A song for worrying. Except for her, the rooms were quiet. Milo had bustled back to the kitchen, busying himself with a coffee grinder. This morning he probably raised a small city. Now he was readying a French press. His place had a musty, sort of lived-in feel, all mid-century like the lobby, but shabbier. On the plaid sofa, August sat with a mug between his hands, listening to Holmes's violin with closed eyes. I was surprised to see more feeling on his face now than I'd seen at all the night before.
"Jamie," August said as I dropped down beside him, "you've met Peterson, right? He's arranging a briefing for us on Leander. Holmes is waiting for coffee, but there's tea."
"Thanks." He settled back into the cushions.
"I love this one."
She'd changed styles. Now she was playing something straightforward and mathematical, which meant it was probably Bach. She was wearing a pair of my socks and her Chemistry Is for Lovers shirt, and she was playing her ex-tutor's favorite song, and I wondered if this was as close as she came to feeling sentimental. She paused, a note still fluttering in the air.
"Peterson," she said to the doorway, her voice still thick with sleep. "So good to see you."
"Ma'am?" He was wheeling in a kind of AV cart, but this one had 12 screens branching out from some kind of glowing processor. Milo came in with a tray. He poured out the coffee carefully in a way that suggested long practice. "I would have thought you'd have someone to do this for you," I told him.
"I think you discount the importance of routine," he said. "My father always spoke about the importance of doing things for oneself, the same way every day. Frees the mind to focus on more important pursuits."
Jesus, I thought, imagining him going through this whole ceramic tray coffee ceremony alone on this couch as Peterson prepared his morning briefing. I'd surrounded myself with geniuses, the most miserably lonely geniuses I could find.
"Jamie,"
Peterson powered up the monitors.
"Feeling better?"
"I am, thank you."
"We'll be speaking more generally than we normally do,"
he said in his affable way.
"Mr. Holmes has requested that I bring you up to speed on the basics of art theft and law enforcement. Wouldn't the most expedient solution be to call the German government and ask them to tell you what Leander was up to?"
Holmes asked, flopping down on the carpet.
"Mr. Holmes has in fact gathered that intel," Peterson said blandly. "But he believes you are all in need of an education on the subject."
With the air of long practice, Holmes waited until Milo raised his mug to his lips and then reached up to whack his elbow. Coffee splattered down his front. She smiled her black cat smile.
"When we're finished here, I'll fetch you a bleach pen and a new shirt," Peterson said to a sputtering Milo. "Now, as for your basic education on modern investigation into art crime..."
We learned that the art world is largely unregulated. There is no worldwide database that tracks the buying and selling of works of art, so it's incredibly easy for unethical dealers to sell stolen or forged pieces. Since most large governments only employ 2 to 3 full-time art theft investigators, those dealers can operate without any real fear of getting caught. "All of this is complicated," Peterson told us, "by the staggering amount of art that the Nazis stole from artists and collectors, mostly Jews as they fled Germany during World War II. Of course, not all escaped. When German Jews were put into concentration camps, their homes, too, were looted. Though the German government has made attempts to track down these pieces and return them to the families of their owners, many works of art have vanished altogether. In a field like this, it's easy for those pieces to reappear magically and for no one to ever realize that they're actually forgeries, despite the best efforts of authenticators."
"Essentially, it's lawless," Peterson told us. "And most law agencies have more pressing matters on their hands. Private investigators like Leander Holmes are often the last hope for those looking to track down forgers and forgery rings, networks of dealers selling art looted from Jewish refugees, or your token drug cartel using paintings as collateral. Since these are very small, exclusive circles, in order to investigate, he'd have to spend months establishing his cover before he could ever hope to gain access to any real information."
While he talked, the monitors behind him played an aquarium screensaver. I took notes on a pad that Milo lent me. August raised his hand like we were all in class.
"How do my brothers fit into this? Lucien? Hadrian?"
Peterson hesitated.
"Hadrian Moriarty is best known for paying off the leaders of corrupt countries to look the other way, while he and his sister make off with their national treasures."
"Yes, of course," he said, turning to Milo. "But how do they fit into this particular situation?" Milo made a hand motion, and the 12 screens switched over to a security feed. A number of different security feeds, and none of them black and white as they were in the movies, but full, deep color. A beachfront cabana, complete with billowing curtains that framed a view of the ocean. A bedroom with a 4-poster bed. Other scenes, other rooms, and the 4 monitors on the bottom, which all showed a different approach to the Holmes's Sussex house. With a start, I recognized the woodpile where I'd last seen Leander. Milo ticked them off on his fingers.
Your brother Lucien's latest hideout over here, and here your brother Hadrian's pied-à-terre in Kreuzberg. Really, August, do get yourself born into a better family next time. And his front entryway, and the view of his back windows, and one of his toilet, though for propriety's sake I've chosen not to show you that one. There's a rather large window in there, though, so I deemed it necessary. He flicked his wrist again, and the screens changed. I have every angle of every room in our family home, including a camera on the septic tank, and two specialists who do nothing but watch these screens and synthesize their deductions.
That doesn't answer my question, August said. Beside him, Holmes leaned forward to see the screens better, drumming her hands against her knees.
If Lucien sneezes, I know about it. If he orders a different cocktail than what he usually has delivered to his sad little beachfront hideaway, it'll be one of my men bringing it to him. If he even thinks about getting into a car, it'll be missing three gaskets and the back right tire, and if anyone remotely connected with him takes a flight to Britain, it makes an emergency stop in Berlin, during which they are forcibly removed from the plane.
Milo's voice was electric with hate. I shrunk a little as he spoke.
I've stripped him of his resources and his connections. The last phone call he made was 3 weeks ago to his sister Philippa, and I had it terminated after 1.3 seconds. So, to answer your question, if Lucien has something to do with Leander's disappearance, he is better than me at my own game, and I am the best. I told my sister she shouldn't worry, and so she won't. We'll sort this through.
Holmes looked up at her brother questioningly. He stared back down at her, his face still tight with anger, until she lifted the enameled coffee pot to refill his mug. Marginally, he relaxed. She turned to look back at the screens. When Milo spoke, he was his usual dour self again.
As for Hadrian Moriarty, he's employing me.
I coughed. August lowered his face into his hands.
Explain,
Holmes said. She didn't sound surprised.
Why, Lottie, I thought you'd be able to figure it out.
She took a breath, thought about it, then began ticking it off on her fingers.
The sort of services you'd provide to a man like that would be in the personal protection business. I can't imagine that he'd employ your mercenaries for anything else, unless it was the transportation of legally dubious artwork from one country to another, and, as most self-respecting governments loathe you and your independent contractors, as it is, I doubt you'd get your hands that dirty for the sake of a Moriarty. Sorry, August.
From behind his hands, he groaned.
So you're providing agents to serve as his bodyguards? It would have to be bodyguards. But how did it come to pass? Hadrian would never approach you, not unless he'd gleaned that August was working for Greystone, and I imagine that if that were the case, we'd have seen some fallout already. Unless Leander's disappearance is the fallout, but no, he'd have gone for me directly. From what I've heard of Hadrian Moriarty and his $6,000 watch, he's not particularly subtle. No, you approached him.
Milo sips his coffee.
But why on earth would he agree? Even if he doesn't personally want me flayed and hanging on his wall, his older brother does, and I can't imagine Hadrian wanting to rock the boat without a good reason. What could you have offered him? You don't appeal to a Moriarty's better angels.
Sorry, August. August groaned again.
But you don't get traction that way, not really, and so you had to make him afraid.
She read some invisible cue in her brother's face.
No, you didn't. You appealed to something he was already afraid of.
Leander, I said, putting the pieces together. He's afraid that Leander will expose his forgery ring.
But he wasn't investigating Hadrian directly. Oh, Leander was deep undercover. He might have kicked up some stray information that led back to Hadrian, and if no one in the government is paying any attention to art swindlers,
and then a Holmes comes along with a boatload of information and takes it to the press,
even if the government never goes after him, his international reputation is ruined,
Holmes finished neatly.
No more lining his piggy bank with cash from plundered treasure.
August looked up. His eyes were miserable.
So you're feeding my brother information about Leander's investigation. You do his private security.
and your men report back to you about what Hadrian is doing. Peterson, Milo called. Please get these three some gold stars. Maybe I was getting better at this. Maybe I was just the only one who was properly afraid. Are you so morally bankrupt that you're willing to gamble with your uncle's life? I demanded. The information runs both ways, Milo said. I told Leander how to keep safely out of Hadrian's way. I told Leander how to avoid Hadrian. It was the only way to keep abreast of the situation. It's a lesson of my father's. It's always worth sacrificing safety for omnipotence. It isn't your safety you were sacrificing, I told him, and he set his jaw. So it can't be Hadrian who has Leander, August was saying with palpable relief. Or Philippa. The two of them are inseparable. You're saying they're not involved?
Insofar as I can tell, Milo said.
No.
Holmes looked down at her hands. She wasn't angry. She wasn't upset. For a brief moment, she looked crestfallen, as though she'd known, absolutely known, the solution to Leander's disappearance and had that surety taken away. I'd wondered why she hadn't been more outwardly worried about her uncle. Here was my answer. She thought that finding him would be as easy as tracking down August's brother. She wasn't used to being wrong. Scowling, she leaned forward to study Milo's security feeds again, as if the answer were there. Maybe it was. I turned back to Milo. Hadrian knows the details of Leander's investigation, and you don't think he's responsible for his disappearance? Milo sniffed. Leander wasn't anywhere near Hadrian's operation. Not until very recently, when he ended up working a source, a dealer who also represented Moriarty interests. Hadrian heard about it, so I heard about it. And as soon as I did, I phoned my uncle up and told him to leave the country. To go stay with my father, who had connections that could shed new light on the investigation from a distance. It was enough time for the dealer to go to ground before Leander returned. Everyone happy, everyone unharmed. Hadrian could have had agents in England, I said. He wouldn't dare. I have every inch of our house surveilled. And Philippa, Lottie has her own plans there, I imagine. He frowned. Either way, it's not as though you're in any danger. I'll send along a sniper or two.
A sniper or two, August muttered. You're all the same.
Beside him, Holmes moved her hands up and down in front of the screen. Nothing happened.
Excuse me, Milo said. I'm juggling a number of flaming clubs here, one of which is you. I'm more than happy to find you a position in Siberia, August.
Thank you. Really. I'm sure Leander appreciated this kind of meddling, too.
Oh, yes, Milo said blandly. He was thrilled.
Hold on, I said. If he wasn't hunting down Hadrian and Philippa, what exactly was Leander investigating in the first place? With a small sound of triumph, Holmes jerked her wrist to the right. All 12 surveillance screens changed. A series of views of the Sussex home's front door. Her left hand made a sharp diagonal, and they all began to rapidly rewind. Milo pursed his lips.
You're going too fast.
I'm not, she said, and flipped both her hands upside down.
The screens obediently stopped.
Those sensors are a ludicrous waste of resources, by the way. Whatever happened to a remote control?
August coughed. I designed the math for the sensors. It's based on a differential of...
Yes, yes, I know, she snapped.
With an imperceptible motion, she set the screens going again.
Look here. The night Leander disappeared. We have him and Jamie having what I'm sure was a very touching moment by the woodpile. Here they go. One, two, back to the house. Through the window, we see the family assembled at dinner. Leander in his room.
A flick and the screen changed.
We're on a time-lapse inside. Milo only had still cameras within the guest rooms. They photograph every 10 minutes.
An oversight, he said, that I've now rectified.
Obviously. Here, Leander on his phone, pacing, or at the very least, moving about. Now, Leander packing his bags, and here in the front hall. He heads quickly down the stairs, holding his suitcases, and...
She flipped to the camera of the outside of the house, where a man in a black cap took off down the drive.
There he goes, off-screen to a waiting car.
She leveled a look at her brother.
Where did he go after that?
With a sigh, Milo snapped his fingers. The screens went black.
We don't know where he is now, but we know where he was and what he was doing before. According to my contacts, the German government has hired him to infiltrate a forgery ring and compile enough evidence to prove their work as fake. These forgers have been knocking off the work of an artist from the 1930s, Hans Langenberg. The sheer number of paintings that have been recovered has raised some alarm bells, so they're making this a special case.
A painting appeared on the screen. I blinked. It had that atmospheric quality I loved, all cobalts and grays with flashes of eggshell white. In the painting, a girl sat reading in the corner, bored in a red cotton dress. The man next to her turned a letter opener in his hands. Another looked out a darkened window. They were all clustered together in the painting's lone splash of light. The rest of the room was muted, unexplored.
This is his most famous painting, The Last of August, it's called. He was German, from Munich. Unmarried, no family. Intensely secretive, and thought to be very prolific, though he only ever gave his agent 3 of his paintings to sell. In the last year, an actual trove of newly discovered work popped up on the auction circuit.
The screens were crowded suddenly with similar paintings, one set in attic rooms and garrets, a back garden at night. Always a group of figures somewhere in the background, holding bright objects in their hands, both looking and not looking at each other.
They've stumped authenticators. It's impossible to tell whether these were Langenberg's work. And if this is revealed to the public, it could look like opportunistic forgers are benefiting off of genocide. Already there are murmurs that the money is lining neo-Nazi pockets. The German government wants this stopped as soon as possible.
The paintings were all appealing, forged or not, and I was disappointed when the screens shut off again. August must have seen my face.
They're lovely, he said in that voice I hated, the one where he was pretending to be himself.
Yes,
Holmes said, to my surprise.
The last of August. Funny, it's beautiful. They all are. And Leander was attempting to track down the supposed forger, examine their studio, find evidence that Langenberg's Renaissance is a fake one.
That was his specific operation, yes, Milo nodded to Peterson, who began packing up the cart.
For his safety, I wasn't told more than that. But Lottie, this ring runs the length and breadth of Europe. Berlin is a fair place to start, of course, but I know for a fact that he was exploring connections in other cities. Budapest, Vienna, Prague, Krakow. This is a massive undertaking, and he could quite literally be anywhere.
Yes, he stopped sending emails to Jamie's father, but he could be in deep enough that he doesn't want to risk exposure. Sending lengthy daily reports to your best friend, last name Watson, isn't exactly the height of subtlety.
He called me Lottie, she said to him, a plea in her voice. In his message, he never calls me Lottie. He didn't leave me a present when he left.
Darling, everyone calls you Lottie,
he stood.
Don't be a child. Leander could very well be in over his head. He could, in fact, be in danger. But he has been before, and he will be again. It's his job. I won't make it my business, especially not when I'm in such a precarious position with Hadrian already. Do you think it was easy explaining to him that Leander had just suddenly decided on a sojourn outside the country of his own volition, and not because he was 2 seconds from stumbling on information that would uncover Hadrian Moriarty's dirty dealings? No, I have a line to walk here.
This isn't that missing giraffe fiasco in Dallas, or that piracy case in Wales. It feels different. He disappeared from our house.
And Father says he's fine, Milo said, as though that was an irrefutable argument.
I know you're concerned, but I need to focus my extra professional efforts in a single direction. Honestly, Lucien is much more of a concern right now, if there's any chance he was involved in Mother's poisoning. And who knows? That threat could involve Leander as well.
You can't argue that it would hurt for me to double down on Lucien Moriarty and on our family's security.
Our mother is in danger, and while I know that she isn't Lottie's favorite person,
Holmes flinched,
I also know she doesn't want her dead. My men on the ground are examining the security breach.
I'm getting weekly reports. I'm nearly done weeding through our staff. My concern is that Lucien is in Thailand, getting through to his men somehow, and I need to find out how.
Which means, August asked.
Which means I'm headed to Thailand tonight. I'll keep my own eyes on the situation. He smiled thinly. I'll be back soon. I do have a war to run, you know.
I remembered Alistair saying that. I was the architect of several wars.
Clearly the impulse to take on the world ran through the Holmes family. But his sister didn't have his same scope of his ambitions. Hers had a laser focus. Milo was giving his sister a rundown of what agents she could turn to if she needed help, though I wasn't sure if she was listening. For his part, August was preoccupied, his eyes fixed on the cart as Peterson rolled it out the door.
We have that lunch with Philippa, which I'm sure will be totally fine and not at all awful and insane. And then Holmes and I are going to the East Side Gallery tonight, I told August, though she and I hadn't discussed it.
That Professor Nathaniel had a standing appointment with Leander. It'll be interesting to see what happens when he doesn't show up. Especially because, is he that dealer that Leander approached? Before he left.
But August was hardly listening.
He trusts me, he said. He just laid all of that information out about my family like it was nothing. He trusts me not to tell them what he knows or what he's doing.
I looked at him sharply. Will you?
No, he said, barking a laugh. I never would. I told you I came here to make peace, and I meant it. He's just never confided in me like that before. I don't know what changed.
Holmes was touching Milo's shoulder, leaning forward to say something in his ear. He shook his head and kissed her briefly on the cheek.
I'll see you soon, he said, and with a nod to us, he left.
Congratulations, August. You've been given code word clearance to the file on your own family.
She tugged at her chemistry is for lovers shirt.
Can we please get on with our day? It's already 7 a.m. and I want to have this wrapped up by midnight.
Holmes asked August and me back to the room to strategize before our lunch with Philippa, but August begged off, saying he needed to work.
On what? You don't exactly do anything.
Holmes raised her eyebrow at the look I shot her.
What? He talks constantly about how he does nothing. I don't see how it's impolite for me to acknowledge that fact.
He put his hands firmly on her shoulders like he was her tutor again.
Charlotte, I don't have any work to do. I'm very politely trying to ditch you so I can get an hour to myself. Unlike the two of you, I start to feel ragged after too much of all this togetherness.
You could have just said so. With a shake of his head and a smile, August took off toward the elevator. I wondered where he was going.
Don't tell me you're unfamiliar with the concept of a polite no, I said to Holmes as she opened the door to our room.
I'm not. I simply expect more from my friends. Honesty is far more efficient than lying.
Milo is just telling him that information to see what he's going to do with it.
Of course, but I trust him. He chose to erase himself rather than turn me in. I doubt he's gone and changed his mind now.
She thought about it for a moment.
And anyway, even if he is off trying to tell on us, he's overdue for a little selfishness.
You're feeling that cavalier about it?
Her smile was all teeth. I said he could try. I'm fairly sure Milo still has a target on August's back. Hadrian can try getting information from a smoking pile of ash, but I don't think he'll succeed.
It was such an awful image that I had to laugh.
You're chipper this morning.
I am, she said. Gird your loins. I need to run through our strategy for our lunch with Philippa.
The raw bar is excellent, Philippa was saying.
She lifted a subtle finger, and like a bit of magic, a white-clad waiter appeared at her elbow.
Could I please have a split of champagne? Whatever your house champagne is, nothing fancy.
Isn't champagne by definition fancy? I asked.
It's barely midday, Holmes said without looking up from her menu. Children, Philippa smiled thinly. Don't tell me you've never rinsed your oyster shell with champagne. What are they teaching you at that wretched school?
I lifted an eyebrow. How to frame children like us for murder?
This whole business was absurd. Philippa had insisted on choosing the restaurant. Milo had been sent an address 10 minutes before we left. He'd raised an eyebrow when he saw. "That restaurant opened in 1853, he'd said, loading us into a car. "And since 1853, it's been overpriced. Enjoy the Italian marble. I'll send some discreet security to sit nearby." But we walked in to find that Philippa Moriarty had booked the entire restaurant. She waited at a table in the back, under a glittering mosaic of a dragon.
"Hello, all," she'd said pleasantly. "I hope this suits you."
"Absolutely not. Unacceptable," Holmes said. "I want my brother's men to see us through the windows. Up, let's go."
And she led us to a table by the window like we were children she was taking to the principal's office. That set the tone for the next wretched hour.
"Do you prefer New England oysters?"
Philippa was saying, toying with her tiny fork.
"I do, but it's so hard to ship them across the ocean. And what's the point, really, when we have such lovely Italian shellfish close at hand?"
"Where is Leander?" I asked, in the tone someone takes with a small child. "I know you know."
"Fine," Philippa said, ignoring her. "I'll choose them myself,"
and raised her finger again. She rattled off an order that might as well have been in Italian, for all I understood it. "Where," I said, "is Leander?" Grimacing, Philippa adjusted her scarf.
"They could really turn up the heat in this place, couldn't they?
Brr. Where is Leander?" This had been our plan, in so much as we had one. I would hammer away at Philippa with the question she wouldn't answer until she laid out her reasons for meeting us.
"If she's going through the trouble of arranging a lunch," Holmes said, "she'll want to pretend it's civility. That gives us time to maneuver. Hammer away at her. It'll give me time to learn her tells."
"Where is Leander?" I said. Then I ordered a soda from the waiter. Holmes was still pretending to study her menu, but I was sure she'd found a way to study Philippa's face. The older woman wouldn't stop fidgeting. It was subtle. She'd smooth a piece of hair or tug at a sleeve, but her hands were in constant motion. 5 minutes passed. 10. Philippa seemed to be waiting for something. I would have worried that our meeting was a diversion, but for what? It wasn't like Greystone HQ would be made vulnerable by our absence. The oysters arrived on a shallow platter on a bed of ice. Holmes's eyes narrowed for a moment in pleasure. She'd had them for the first time at my father's house in Connecticut when Abby, my stepmom, had brought home a sack from the fish market, and Holmes had eaten nearly a whole tray. I knew her well enough to know she liked the ritual of it, the strange, beautiful meat, the tiny tools used to prise it out. Almost reverently, Holmes lifted an oyster and studied it.
"How are your orchids?"
she asked Philippa in a polite voice. And just like that, Philippa's mask slid off her like oil.
"I'll give you one chance to bargain with us," Philippa said,
placing her hands on the table.
"It's more than you deserve, and you know it. Tell me where August is, and I'll negotiate on your behalf with Lucien. Hadrian isn't interested in treating with you, but I am. Surely that's why you called me here to this farce of a lunch."
"It's too bad that your gardener quit, and so suddenly," Holmes said, lifting the shell to her nose to study it.
"That was just this morning, wasn't it? Milo did need someone to tend to his carnations." "There are other orchid gardeners," Philippa said. "Here are my terms. I'll ask Lucien to give you 2 years. 2 years amnesty from the death sentences put on you. Long enough for you to grow up, come of age, finish school. And then you'll disappear. Choose a new identity, a new name."
"Milo chose that gardener on my recommendation," Holmes said, turning the shell in her hands.
"Oh, these just smell like the ocean, don't they? Makes me wish I was at home. In Sussex."
Philippa paused.
"In Sussex?" "Yes, with my very sick mother and my missing uncle."
"Tell me," Holmes said, and reached across the table to pluck the tiny oyster fork from Philippa's plate.
"Have you seen Leander Holmes recently? The last I saw him, he was concerned about my very sick mother.
The better question would be where you're keeping my baby brother, Philippa snapped. Don't toy with me.
Your brother, Holmes said.
My brother.
Which one? The child murderer hiding out on a beach in Thailand, or the antiquities thief with a receding hairline?
Did nobody teach you any respect? Philippa exploded. No one. Did nobody tell you that being clever isn't enough? You need to be willing to work with people. I'm attempting to offer you an out.
I will never work with you.
I'm willing to call in men, right now, to take you to Lucien,
she continued.
He might be done taking it slow. I'm sure he'd be willing to speed things up. Break your hands. Kill you. Let's see if I can get you out of the country into Thailand before your bear of a brother can stop them.
The waiter is texting someone, I told Holmes, not bothering to whisper. He pulled out his phone the second she started yelling. Holmes leaned forward.
August might be alive, and my uncle might be just taking a short jaunt across the Swiss Alps and forgot to tell us. Listen, there's no time. You've made sure of that. These are my terms. You order your brother Lucien out of hiding. You and Hadrian go to England. You apologize to my parents, and you tell me where my uncle is. And then, perhaps I dig August up and see if he still wants anything to do with you. Apologize to them? For what? Having the misfortune of producing you?
For poisoning my mother, she said quietly. For trying to kill me. For taking what was a mistake and blowing it up into a horrible international war. I'd been half-turned, watching the front window, and there they were, cars pulling up against the curb, like dark beads on a white string. We have to go, I said. Now!
Those terms are unacceptable.
Philippa sat back in her chair.
No, Charlotte. Remember that you fired the first shot. August will come to us in time.
Holmes, I said, keeping my voice even. They have guns. With a fingernail, Holmes dug the meat out of her oyster and dropped it onto her plate. She poured a draft of champagne into the empty shell, tossed it back.
There'll be a time when you regret not taking my offer, Holmes told Philippa, and then she and I ran like hell.
Through the maze of tables, through the strangely bustling kitchen, and then instead of out the back door.
There'll be men there too, she hissed.
She dodged a surprised line cook and yanked me into the walk-in freezer, slamming the heavy door shut behind her.
Your brother better be 2 seconds away, I told her, coughing, because that thing locks from the outside.
By key code, she said, pulling out her phone.
Didn't you see? This is a very fancy seafood restaurant. Can't be letting people see you freeze your Dover sole. Hello, Milo. Could you please hack the walk-in freezer at Picant? Watson's stubble is starting to freeze. Change the code and then send someone to fetch us.
She hung up. We looked at each other. Milo just told us this morning that there wasn't any way that Hadrian or Philippa had your uncle captive, I told her.
So, what was that all about? Milo can be myopic. Thinking you know everything is dangerous, she said. I know the Moriartys are involved. I'm sure of it.
She said it so fiercely that I took a step back. Orchids? I said, an attempt to defuse her.
That was your master plan? To poach away her orchid gardener?
Her eyebrows were beginning to bead with snow.
She's won several international awards for her flowers, Holmes said. I thought Milo could use some pointers. Grow a tree or two in his penthouse.
You are awful.
I know,
she said, and grinned.
So all that back there, it was just a pissing contest. It was me giving her a final chance,
she sighed.
Sometimes I'm far nicer than I should be.
I'd hate to see you when you're mean, I said.
God, it's cold. I think I can feel all my teeth. How long until your brother's men get here?
I think they were on the roof. Just another minute or two. I don't hear gunfire, that's good. She stomped her feet a little against the cement floor.
What's in?
Holmes. For a long second she studied the ground.
I left my coat back at the table, she said,
and when she looked up, I saw that her eyes had gone glassy and sad. I took a step forward.
Hey, I said softly. What's wrong? Did you know that when my uncle goes away, he always leaves me a present? He didn't this time. He didn't... The last time he went, he left me a pair of gloves. They were black cashmere, fingerless, perfect for picking locks.
She looked down again, shoving her hands in her pockets.
I wish I had them now.
5 minutes later, they opened the door. There was ice in my mouth and snow on my shoes, and Holmes had stopped crying. Though, really, I guess she'd never started. Back at Greystone, we bypassed the security checks by the simple expedient of telling them to fuck off, and rode the elevator back to our room. Holmes had that sort of deliberate silence around her that meant that she was brooding. 10 more minutes of this, and she'd start chain-smoking under an avalanche of blankets. I didn't get to eat any lunch. It was the sort of deliberately stupid comment I'd make to draw her out of herself. It also happened to be true. I sort of wanted an oyster.
We'll go, she promised. You can always get a sandwich from Milo's penthouse. He keeps a spread in there, usually.
No one will snipe me when I get in there?
No one will snipe you, she said. Where's your phone?
I left it here. Why?
We went to meet a Moriarty, and you left your phone at home? What if we were separated?
We weren't separated, I said irritably. I really was hungry. I still don't have anything to tell my father, and he keeps texting me.
Check it now, she said, sitting straight down onto the floor.
After a quick once-over, she hauled a book out of one of the stacks beside her. There it was, that familiar mix of dread and anticipation I always felt when she told me to do something like this. I climbed up to my loft and dug my phone out of the tangled sheets. I had a text from a number programmed in as French love interest.
Simon, it read, do you still want to get coffee this afternoon? I'd love to talk more about my paintings.
I swore. Down below me, Holmes smiled to herself, balancing her book on her knees. She must have dug my phone out in the night, but how, I couldn't imagine. When I'd left that morning, she was starfished out in the same position she'd been in when she fell asleep. Still, she'd managed to send Marie-Hélène the world's most awful text.
Hi, love. Hope you don't mind. Tabitha gave me your number. Ace wingwoman she is. Fancy a cuppa tomorrow.
Holmes, this is wretched. This is like British by numbers.
Can't help it. It's what you sound like when you're playing posh.
She bit her lip.
Isn't that right, mate? Aren't you the sly one? Marie-Hélène had written back.
Jesus Christ.
Sending your cousin to do your dirty work? Yes, of course, I'd love to see you.
Love to see your paintings and talk more about them. Sorry was a bit shit last night at your teacher's. Got nervous.
Simon wouldn't have used an apostrophe if he's too lazy to type out a full word. She looked innocently up at me from the top of her book.
Bloody hell, I made a bleeding mistake. Why nervous?
Marie-Hélène had asked and added a line of angel emojis.
Isn't it obvious? You're beautiful. You know it, too.
Blush emoji.
No, I groaned. No, absolutely not. This is like a LAD song. This is like my sister's LAD fan fiction.
I learned quite a bit from your sister,
Holmes said with some satisfaction.
I learned that when you were a toddler, you once insisted on wearing your underwear outside your trousers for an entire week. I saw the photos.
No, I was going to murder Shelby, and creatively.
I also learned every word to every song on LAD's debut album.
To my surprise, she started warbling.
Girl, yeah, girl, you're beautiful. You know you're effin' beautiful.
I threw a pillow at her. She dodged it nimbly.
How can someone with a private music teacher have such bad pitch? We all have our own personal skill set, Watson. Not all of us are professional heartbreakers.
Is there a real reason why I'm meeting Marie-Hélène for coffee this afternoon? Or are you just feeling punchy? She lofted the book up in the air. Gifte, the title read on a marbled textbook cover. Are you asking what I want for Christmas? I asked. Or should I suddenly be able to speak German?
Poisons, Watson. The word means poison.
There are some things you can't tell from surveillance footage, and from frisking the housekeeping staff, as much as Milo would deny it. If I can't do anything about Leander, I'm going to run some things I know about my mother's medical history, try to narrow down what she's been exposed to, and from there determine how it's gotten into the house. Milo's gone, you know, and now I have access to his labs, to his techs. It's going to be an excellent afternoon.
I thought we'd have this case solved by midnight, I said.
We will.
This case, not the one with your parents.
Obviously, they're connected. Occam's razor, Watson. How often are your family members kidnapped and poisoned inside the same week?
Her words were flip, but her voice wasn't.
The simplest explanation is the truest, always. So I'm boning up, as it were.
While you're using this girl as an in, pump her for information.
Turn on that skeezy, laddish charm.
Any more gross puns?
I'm just not up for it.
Stop. What did it say about us that the best we'd gotten along in days was when we were planning my date with another girl?
Fine. I'll get a look inside Marie-Hélène's studio, ask her friends some leading questions, try to get a read on Nathaniel before we stake out Eastside Gallery tonight. But I'm getting a sandwich first.
Yes, good. Like she was donning a cape, Holmes threw her ratty robe over her clothes and tucked her book under her arm.
And what's in? She said.
Wear your fedora.
And she snickered to herself all the way down the hall.
Marie-Hélène liked my hat. She liked my boots, too, and the band shirt I wore with my ripped jeans, which wasn't exactly a good thing since I'd never listened to them.
And anyway,
she was saying, holding her latte in her gloved hands,
Faulkner's always been my favorite, but I like Murakami a lot, too. They're so different. It's hard to choose between them.
Oh, I said. Sure.
We were standing outside the cafe where she'd wanted to meet, a half block from her studio. She pointed it out to me earlier, the steepled roof, the brick walls, and I was waiting for an excuse to ask to see it.
And graphic novels. I think they're what got me drawing in the first place.
She sipped at her drink. The fuzzy ball on the top of her hat bobbled back and forth.
Are you okay? You look distracted again.
I forced a smile.
Just a bit lost in my thoughts, love, I said, and I was.
I wanted to move things along. I wanted to be back at Greystone with new evidence. I wanted to know when talking to a French girl about our favorite authors on a snowy street in Berlin stopped being my idea of a perfect Sunday. All I really wanted to do was get to her studio so I could rifle through her things while she was in the bathroom. Sometimes I wondered if hanging out with Charlotte Holmes had made me into a monster. At times like this, I knew it for sure.
So, how did you get into art?
Well, once I got lost in the Louvre...
Wait, she said, frowning.
I thought I told you that already, at the old Met.
She had. I backtracked.
No, of course. but that was when you decided you liked art. I meant, like, when you wanted to, make it.
Marie-Hélène raised an eyebrow, but she gamely launched into a story about seashells and her grandmother's spoon collection and a pencil she stole from her postman. It was a well-told story, funny and smart. I stopped listening almost immediately. Instead, I took her hand in mine and set off toward her studio in a wandering sort of way.
"Do you have any of that old work up there?" I asked when we reached the door.
"I don't," she said. Are you trying to get me alone, Simon Harrington?
The last name Holmes had given me.
I might be.
I watched her think about it. The tip of her nose was pink in the cold, and she was wearing some bright lipstick that made her look like she'd wandered in out of a fairy tale.
I didn't want to kiss her.
How did I not want to kiss her?
I'd been completely ruined.
Okay,
she said shyly.
I'll show you my paintings.
Is anyone else around? I asked as she fiddled with the keys.
It's only a few days till Christmas. I'm going home tomorrow, but I think that I might be the last one here.
Good, I said, too eagerly. There'd be fewer witnesses, fewer occupied studios, and I wanted to dig around. If I could, I wanted to rule out Nathaniel's students as suspects. I liked Marie-Hélène.
In another life, I could have liked her a lot, and I wanted to stop wondering how I could use her as a tool in our case. The studios were dark, except for the pale winter afternoon streaming in through the windows, and Marie-Hélène didn't bother to flick on any lights as we went along. Not until we got to her space at the end of the row, and she hoisted herself up onto her work table, kicking her legs.
"Hi," she said, biting her lip.
"Crap," I thought, because of course I'd be expected to make a move here. Touch her neck, kiss her, hell, maybe sing her an L.A.D. song. Do something to live up to the ridiculous texts Holmes had been sending. They were ridiculous texts, and in more ways than one. There had to have been a way to arrange this meeting without all that over-the-top flirting. If they'd gotten friendly last night, why hadn't Holmes gone and met Marie-Hélène herself? She was the better detective. We both knew it. Okay, I'd been kind of petty that night before, keeping my arm around Marie-Hélène, bragging to Holmes that the French girl liked me. "Ha ha, I don't care that August is hanging around, I have someone too." And yeah, it was kind of a dick move, but I thought she'd brushed it off, and, oh my God, I thought, she's totally setting me up. Either she knows I'm going to totally cock this up, or she knew I was going to cock this up, and she wanted me to go after Marie-Hélène and leave her, Holmes, the hell alone. Oh, I could see it now, her laughing to August about it. "You know what Watson's like," she'd say. "It's never been about me. He likes every pretty girl." Well, there's a pretty girl right now, I thought, that wants me, and I let Simon come crawling out of his cave. I slipped my arms around Marie-Hélène's waist and kissed her like a man coming home from war. Here was another point under the monster column. It was a good kiss. She leaned into me. She put her hands in my hair. She pulled me down into her like she wanted me, like I wasn't the terrible person Holmes thought I was, like I was somehow good enough for a girl like her. Like Marie-Hélène, I mean. Of course, that was what I meant. With a small noise, she drew me in closer, pulling out the tails of my shirt so she could touch my stomach. Her hands were warm, but they were still in her gloves. We realized it at the same time, and laughing, she pulled them off, one, two, with her teeth. Something pulled hard in my chest, something open and raw. I wanted to get my hands under her jacket, unbutton her blouse. A bigger part of me wanted to be back in Sciences 442, knee to knee with Charlotte Holmes, while she talked to me about her vulture skeletons. "Hey," I said to Marie-Hélène, out of breath. "Hey, you're leaving tomorrow. Isn't this a little fast?"
"I don't think so,"
she traced a finger up my arm.
I think it is for me, actually."
With a show of surprise, she sat back.
"Simon, you're a gentleman," she said,
teasing, but I could tell that she was hurt underneath it.
"Not like that,"
I ran a hand through her hair.
"I mean that I actually wanted to see your art."
True, but not in the way it sounded.
"And I want to see you too, again, after Christmas."
True, sort of.
"When are you coming back?"
"This wasn't..."
She sighed.
"I broke up with my boyfriend last week. I don't want to see you after Christmas, okay? I wanted to hook up with you because I thought you were leaving, and when I go back to Lyon, I'll probably see him. I didn't want him to be the last person I'd been with."
"Oh.
Sorry. Too honest?"
It wasn't. Both of us were in too deep. It just wasn't with each other. "I'm fine," I said, and it was completely true. Marie-Hélène smiled a bit sadly.
"You're cute, you know. My heart's somewhere else."
"That's fair." I offered her a hand, and she hopped down from her work table. We looked at each other, and I laughed a little at it all. The cup of paintbrushes, the straightforward way she'd shot me, Simon, down. That I was in Germany at all, with a strange girl in her art studio, and that Charlotte Holmes had set it all up to see what I would do.
"While I'm up here," I said, "would you show me some of what you're working on, art-wise? Or is that a bit weird?"
She giggled.
A bit weird, she said, wandering over to a stack of paintings by the wall. But sort of nice.
Yeah, okay. How about this one? It's a riff of one of the Turkish baths in Budapest. I really love the tile. Look, I wanted to represent the mosaic I saw there in abstract.